And 3, 2, 1, action. Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force. In this week's episode, we're going to be discussing what lies ahead in the Roaring Twenties. I mean, do you think we can call it the Roaring Twenties? Do you think it's going to be a bit more unpredictable? I think it's going to be the tricky twenties.
The tricky twenties, yeah. And the turbulent twenties, probably as well, yeah. That's what it'll be.
Well, there's a lot of things that we could see in a whole range of industries.
I mean,
what are you predicting we're going to see in the 2020s in general?
The pessimist in me thinks World War III. The optimist in me thinks we're going to see a much more greener society.
Yeah.
Like, we've already seen so many companies have already said they're going to stop taking ads from like oil and like fossil fuel companies. They're stocks. A lot more supermarkets have said, okay, we're going to reduce our plastic by 50%.
But on the downside, we're going to start seeing cigarette adverts again. there'll be a lot more...
Are we actually starting cigarette adverts again?
Nah, they're not.
Oh, good, thank God.
No, can you imagine?
Jeez. Oh, the outrage.
I think there'll be a lot more policing of big tech.
More taxes, I think.
Yeah, the conversation around how we, you know, police freedom of speech and, you know, the sort of testing the limits of what your various groups can get away with online is going to become, you know, it's going to see a lot more, a lot more of a debate around that, and also, yeah, more policing, which is in a lot of, you know, in most ways a good thing, particularly if they're coming from these, you know, these awful groups espousing awful ideologies.
Yeah, of course.
Also, legalization of cannabis on a global scale.
That's a very big chance, yeah. You know, if I was a betting man, I could even bet to think we may see it this decade in the UK. So
yeah, going to be an interesting decade for Arsenal, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a very difficult decade. Yeah, we're going to win a cup this decade. I can feel it.
I mean, we'll see. So it's going to be. I think it's going to be a very exciting few years ahead. I think politically, there's going to be a lot of turbulence, like you mentioned, but.
We got the potential re-election of Trump this year.
Exactly, yeah.
Who's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, we literally just left the EU, so
yeah.
It will be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah, and whether we're going to get that deal or no deal at the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of bureaucracy that our leaders have to file through. But it's going to be a very exciting year ahead for lots of reasons, and particularly in the film and TV world.
Of course, yeah.
So, without further ado, welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force. And now, for our feature presentation, Tom Hanks Defense Force, with your hosts, Alex Halpern and Jack Fryer, a podcast for people who love film, television, and Tom Hanks. First of all, Jack, how are you?
I am not bad, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, man. How's your 2020 been so far?
It's been
your decade.
It's been eventful so far. It's been fun, but I can't complain. I'm still alive.
That's absolutely.
Yep.
That's you know, we're still going, still breathing. The world, the planet's still here for
yeah,
now.
Yeah, thanks for now. Yes, touch wood, it stays that way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess the focus of this episode, what film and TV moves and changes, no matter how big or small, what are we going to see in the decade ahead? Because a whole decade brings a whole new like list of exciting opportunities.
We've got 10 years. Some might argue 10 years too many of the film industry.
It's too much for me.
No, yeah.
We're gonna see. Well, I can't do this sober.
we're gonna see a huge influx of content. There's gonna be too much content.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and you know, we can discuss this in more detail shortly. You know, the boom of streaming services
and more content in general. So, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, Jack, what's the key things that you think we're going to see in the decade ahead?
Well, because I'm on this point now, so obviously, let's get the elephant in the room out of the way. So, bye, Elmer. For streaming wars.
Streaming services.
Yeah, it's the elephant in the room. We know we're gonna talk about it, so let's get it out of the way. I remember saying to a friend before the streaming services really took off that there's too many films and TV series out there, and it's makes me sad I'll never watch any of them. And now, with hundreds of more streaming services crawling out of the woodwork, aliens are coming out of the goddamn walls, there's going to be so many. We got Netflix, Prime, Disney+, Apple TV+, obviously Shudder, there's little ones, obviously, when you got BritBox,
Quibi coming out.
Yeah, Quibi, well. HBO Max, Peacock, CBS All Access, you know, obviously we've all got all our UK little productions as well going on.
Yeah.
And we're going to see a lot more international content, I see, me pushed forward as well now. So I think that's what's going to happen as well now. But I think it's going to be, we're going to be actually swamped with content now because of the streaming war, which is going to cause, I think, a lot of stress to people.
For sure. And with this massive influx of content, do you think that's going to have a change, or that will change the model in which production companies produce for studios? So if streaming services are actually negotiating and dealing with all the distribution, then maybe more production companies will follow the Blumhouse kind of route. You're allocating smaller, more minimal budgets for a lot of new content makers, and then selling them on, you're getting first look deals with the bigger studios and streaming services, and then using that system to make a profit.
Of course, I think we're going to see a lot more risk taking, because look, in the age of streaming services, joke approved, you can still have a big idea on a small budget and it can make a huge profit. Because if a film can cause controversy and a large discussion, I think the people still come. Obviously, in the age where people say cinema's dying, we've seen Disney break more records with its mass cinema content, you know, all sweeping all the records. But despite all this, Joker became the first R-rated film, as we said and discussed last episode, to hit the billion.
Yeah.
Which I think proves that if a film out there is exciting and gets people talking with a good enough distribution, I think we can still see cinema surviving.
Well, that's an interesting point. Do you think producers will look for more controversial stories?
Yes, 100%.
And will bank on the media focusing and honing in on on why these stories are controversial?
Because look, I think we're going to see, because obviously Joker, superhero film, like 53 million, 50, 60 million is a tiny budget, you know? That's probably just like, that's like literally some of the actors' salaries for like a big Marvel film all combined will come to that amount.
Mm.
So you see a whole, I think we're going to see, I definitely think with DC they're going to start seeing a lot more riskier superhero films. Obviously, there's talk of a Lex Luthor film kind of like in the Joker style,
which
is rumored. And Todd Phillips wanted to get more of those kind of films off the ground.
So like an origin story, but also delves into a much deeper sociological question and plays with also those things.
Because I think
real things.
Because obviously I couldn't think of another villain they could do for. As soon as Luthor got rumours, like, of course, because obviously a powerful man who yet feels small compared to Superman, and it could deal with the effects of power. I think that one, while the Joker obviously dealt with austerity
power,
and mental health.
Belittling.
Yeah.
Also, you know, this new idea of the tech genius.
Yeah.
The whole sort of concept of the Mark Zuckerberg pajamas dressing gown CEO.
Yeah.
Who's also, you know, whose understanding of the technological universe is far beyond and far outmatches those of, you know, the sort of the CEOs,
the old school
of older
CEOs,
corporations.
Yeah,
exactly, the old school
Warren Buffett,
ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's a whole new breed of potential mastermind here.
Yeah, and I think in cinema in general, I think not just films that go direct to streaming services, but I think we're going to see a lot more risk-taking, I feel, because obviously there's all the talks, obviously physical media, I think it's going to take another big hit the next decade. I think HMV will probably go into administration for the third time again.
Yeah.
I think physical media is dying. It's not just obviously gay, apart from obviously vinyl, which is a very specific sound. Obviously CDs, DVDs and Blu-rays, and even probably 4K will take a bit of a tumble. Because obviously with 4K streaming now, that's obviously coming into a larger factor as higher quality TVs become more cheaper and accessible.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we're going to see another downplay of physical media, which is why a lot of companies like Zavvi are pushing forward like collectibles, like steelbook collectibles, you know, like booklets and collectibles for collectors to keep physical media going.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, I've mentioned this in previous episodes, but we did say the same thing about cinema.
Yeah.
So we thought the VHS would kill the cinema, and then we said the DVDs would kill the cinema, and cinema is still going. So, I mean, do you think cinema itself has more legway?
Yeah.
If production companies continue to, or studios even, continue to push films out into the cinemas and not just for streaming services?
Yeah, because I can see our local Odeon has finally invested in an IMAX screen. So I think IMAX is one of the ways, I think, keeping cinema alive. Obviously, there's the annoying thing where if you're in a normal screen, you can sometimes hear the IMAX screen next to it.
Oh, so
when I was watching Hustlers, I could hear like explosions from an IMAX screening. So I was watching
1917,
yeah, something like that. But it wasn't that, but it was a different film. I can't remember what came out around Hustlers, but yeah. Might have been Ad Astra actually, but yeah. I think an IMAX 3D is such a, because it's such an experience you can't really get in the home. I think that's one, even though it's an extra £5 ticket or so, I think that it, for some people, I think that's enough to get them out to the cinema, because it's obviously, it's an all-encompassing thing.
Well, it's the event, isn't it? It's the experience. Yeah. And maybe, you know, cinemas will start advertising certain films as experiences.
Yeah.
You know, part of their niche for decades now has been that you're paying for an exclusive experience.
Yeah.
So maybe with... Yeah, maybe when more independent studios that aren't too tied down to a particular brand release these, more likely smaller budget films in the cinemas, they're going to try and market it as a very unique experience.
Because I remember there's a famous quote by Alfred Hitchcock where he said, a good film is worth the price of travel, the ticket, and the babysitter. So... Or something along those lines, yeah.
But also, I think in that day, people would go to the cinema dressed in almost their Sunday best.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it was much more about, it was much more of a special event.
I know, because even these days, you get people who don't... I've seen somebody get annoyed at somebody who's on their phone during the trailers, so it was disrespectful. And I actually know somebody who actually told someone for checking their phone in the cinema... I saw that, and they said afterwards, I was raised in theatre, and to me, it's the same rules applies in the cinema, so...
Oh, that's interesting.
Trailers
have always had that sort of get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah.
Because, that's not really what you're paying for.
No, yeah.
It's an interesting way of looking at it.
No, but I'm one of those people who gets annoyed when people talk during the trailers. I'm like, I want to be sold on this film, and I don't want to hear your conversation about your shopping, Margaret, come on.
Yeah, Margaret, I mean... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I do think cinema will have its place, but I think cinemas, obviously, they're increasing their prices again because obviously it's such a competitive market. Obviously, we've still got lots of chains. Obviously, the chains are all different, competing each other. But I think cinema will still be around the end of the decade, but I think it's going to start becoming more of an exclusive club, I feel, because obviously not everyone will be able to afford the tickets, which is why I think things like Odeon, Limitless, or whatever, Cineworld Unlimited, whatever, they are going to become more popular. But then again, how that impacts the cinemas, actual the box office of films, we don't know.
But I guess with the releasing with when Avatar 2 and 3 are released,
this decade, hopefully.
Supposedly.
Well, they're meant to come out in 2014 and 2015, and we're like six years late. James, come on.
Yeah, exactly. It's 2024 and 2025. So potentially, but then that will, because presumably they will go to the cinema. There'll be cinematic events, not streaming service releases. So that'll draw in huge numbers again. Obviously, there were still a considerable number of people that didn't like Avatar.
Yeah, of course.
Who won't go out. So maybe it won't have the same volume at first, but then I think Cameron will still find a way to push those boundaries.
And I think Joker as well, going back to that, I think it proved that word of mouth is still a very popular tool as well.
Oh, for sure. And I think, look at the success of Jojo Rabbit. I mean, that's generally a very small production.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And that's... I think word of mouth has been very effective.
No, when I saw Jojo Rabbit, it was in the smallest screen in the cinema, but it was absolutely packed.
Yeah.
And I just think that was probably... I'm not involved in the decision-making, but you're thinking, a film with Oscar winners in it, it's like Sam Rockwell, and it's got Taika Waititi, you'd think they'd throw it in a big film, but that film was considered a huge risk, but... it did well, made a $55 million at the box office on a $14 million budget, so...
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to all of your previous points about cinema ticket prices creating more of an exclusive club or even more competition between cinemas, that's very much what we're seeing with all these streaming services.
Yeah, of course.
You listed them at the beginning of the episode. And
Apple Plus is like a fiver, Disney Plus is £6 a month. But then you've got different tier packages, things like Netflix, obviously with Prime,
And then with
the TV's
Plus,
a bonus,
And with something like Disney Plus, you get National Geographic, you get ESPN, it's a whole bundle.
Yeah, you can get a bundle with Hulu as well for that, so
yeah.
Disney Plus for the kids, Hulu for the adults.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, this huge war is very much, you know, I guess building, but I wouldn't say it's quite broken out
yet. I know, but obviously when you see all the content that's coming out for the other ones, obviously with Disney, you're going to see, obviously they've got Disney, then they've got Marvel, Star Wars, obviously Lucasfilm as well, which is Star Wars, obviously Pixar, National Geographic. You've got a lot of, they've got a huge sway in the market already with mass names. And obviously, then you've got HBO Max coming out, which is a lot of, which will have films as well as content. But it's going to have
big names like Spielberg aligning themselves with Apple TV. That's a huge marketing draw in. I mean, it's then not like no one is going to buy every single service.
Of course.
They're going to want to see certain films. So do you think at some point, more towards the middle of the decade, we're going to see a service that essentially allows you to sort of pay for certain shows across multiple services?
You can kind of already do that with Amazon. Like, you can buy like a whole series digitally for about £12. You can even buy an individual episode. So you can think, I'll buy one episode, give it a go. But
see what I think of the pilot.
Yeah, it's because one of my questions for you is, do you think, in relation to this, we're going to see bigger, more reliance on existing intellectual properties, aka IP, or we're going to see more risk-taking? Because look at HBO Max, example, they're going to have DC series such as Blue Beetle, Green Lantern. We also have a Gossip Girl series, a Last of the Mohicans series, and we're going to have a lot of other big names like Looney Tunes is coming back, another Adventure Time, Aquaman series, Gremlins, and there's going to be a lot of other shows already, like Sesame Street's going to be on there as well.
Well, I think certain services will
Doom Patrol
develop particular, particular assets they have. So I think with things like Disney, they will, I think they will definitely double down on existing IP.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe they'll slow down with Marvel at some point, because there is already more of a conversation around, you know, the sort of extensiveness of the Marvel.
Yeah, that's one of my next questions I was going to ask you later. So.
Yeah, but then, you know, with things like Netflix, part of their brand at the moment is that they're investing in international and, you know,
original. They're really good original content.
Exactly, yeah. So I think they're going to double down on that, knowing fully well that they're up against already established brands with very specific intentions and very specific models of concepts and content.
I know, because obviously I think at first, I think a lot of these streaming services, they're going to rely on big names. Like Peacock, for example, is going to have Saved by the Bell, Where's Wally, Where's Wally series, MacGruber, you know, and as we DreamWorks Productions are going to be involved, Battlestar Galactica, Brave New World. So existing properties, they're going to use that first, and then I think draw those people in, then hit them with the original content. I think that's a strategy at the moment.
Sure. Well, I mean, I still think they'll be cautious with their original content.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, like with Disney, you're trialing things like, you know, that sort of learning, the sort of early learning TV, trialing that kind of your educational content.
Yeah,
they're being cautious with that. And I think they'll be a lot more cautious with, you know, the other potential expanded universes.
Yeah.
Unlike, you know, Universal, which tried to create its whole dark universe, you know, by going in with this massive
The Mummy,
Tom Cruise blockbuster, The Mummy.
I feel
yeah.
so sorry for that. They had a cast photo of, like, Russell Crowe, Javier Bardem, Jonathan Depp. Because obviously they said Johnny Depp's going to be Invisible Man, Javier Bardem's going to be Frankenstein's monster, Angelina Jolie's going to be Provider Frankenstein. Then The Mummy tanked, and all these films got cancelled, and like, and now Leigh Reynolds doing The Invisible Man in a very different direction, obviously, to the Johnny Depp one, it would have been.
Which
so,
I
yeah.
think will be far more yeah. effective. I think there are a number of problems with that film, including yeah. casting. You know, in the direction of where, you know, how they plan to, you know, what kind of universe they wanted to build out. But yeah, just my personal opinion.
I know, because I think, in answer to my own question, I think we are going to see a lot more original content risk taking, because obviously the Netflix original brand that has drawn so many people in, obviously that's what they think, that's their main Netflix. Obviously Netflix, other studios like say HBO Max, Warner Brothers, they've got 100 odd years or so of content readily available. It's meant to be 10,000 hours of content from launch.
10,000?
Or something like that, yeah, ridiculous. Obviously, they've got all the classic films from like the 40s, the Golden Age, up to modern content, so.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting, but I think audiences will get fed up, I think, because it will lead on to my next thing about, are superhero films going to die? Because obviously, we're seeing Marvel taking a bit more of a risk or so with lesser known content such as Shang-Chi, hopefully I got that right, The Eternals,
mm-hmm.
We're going to see a Blade reboot in Mahershala Ali. We're going to see a lot more original characters who've never been on screen before. And obviously, in terms of diversifying as well, we'll see more representation, which is good.
Yeah, we'll see more women directors, which is definitely needed.
And all the Marvel films coming out this year are directed by women.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
amazing.
Black Widow and The Eternals, so yeah.
Yeah, Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah, that's DC, yeah, of course. DC, Birds of Prey, which is coming out next week, directed by a woman as well, so...
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, yeah. I think, you know, we'll see that across all genres. I think, you know, I mean, I think Jason Blum... kind of controversially made a point that they haven't worked with enough female directors in the past, but I think, you know, I mean, horror has great potential with women directors.
Of course. Babadook, for example.
Well, yeah, exactly, and, you know, directors from diverse ethnic minority groups. Yeah, there's a lot more potential for, you know, these new voices amongst independent cinema, which I think we're about to see a lot more of as well.
Yeah,
because there's a real emphasis on diversification, which makes for a lot more exciting storytelling.
Of course, I think we're going to see, in terms of, I think we'll see a lot more representation, I think, in cinema, you know, in terms of who's getting behind the director's chair and leading films. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. I think which is going to cause, obviously, there's a big debate whether should the Academy Award chains, like some people have been suggesting, they should have a male director and female director categories as opposed to alongside Best Actor, Best Actress and all that. So
yeah, here's an interesting point just off the top of that.
Okay.
I saw this article which a friend of mine posted, who's a casting agent, posted on Facebook the other day. And, you know, there was an argument in The Guardian about whether casting directors should receive an Academy category as well.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think stuntmen are way overdue best stunts for an Oscar as well, because they literally put their lives on the line for making.
It's incredibly dangerous.
I know, and obviously a lot of stuntmen have died during their craft, and a stuntman has not been seriously injured, even died as part of things gone wrong, and it's a very big part of filmmaking. And I think that needs to be acknowledged a lot more. And casting as well. Well, some award shows already have a Best Ensemble Award.
Sure, but for the specific casting directors, the ones who specifically say, and you know someone who does, as someone who's particularly interested in casting.
Yeah.
You know, like, the incredibly instrumental role of choosing why each actor is the best option for each role.
Of course,
you know, there's a lot of analysis, and, you know, both from, like, a creative and a business perspective, and, you know, thinking very carefully about what the fans would, how the fans would react to that casting. You know, there are so many different technical layers that are analysed in detail before a decision is made. So, yeah, I'd say absolutely. You know, maybe there will be at least, you know, more sort of a... there might be an Academy Award that's a bit the run for casting, which we might see this decade.
Yeah, I do think we'll see. I think the stunt one's still part of the discussion every year.
Mm.
And I think to the point where, obviously, when that whole popular film category came and went in a lightning strike, I think people like saying, "Doesn't give it to stunts," and I think that probably will change.
Do you think we're likely to see that this decade?
If I were to say if there was going to be a new award, I think that would be it.
Mm.
I think that's long. I think it's been long overdue. People have campaigned for it, so that'll be one I think we'll see. I think award shows will still play a prominent role. I think obviously the fact that companies like Netflix are throwing a lot of their weight into these, trying to move into these areas, you know, I think we'll see that. I think Amazon's going to probably do that now. I think someone from Amazon, I believe, said they want to release 30 films a year.
Yeah.
Obviously, not whether all of those will receive cinema releases or will go straight to streaming, we'll see. But
I think we're about to see a lot more doubling down on genre films as well.
Yeah.
Particularly amongst European directors who are, you know, a bit more strangled for funding.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's difficult for them to get bigger budgets. So if they are producing things which... you know, if they're producing in genres that require more of a, you know, they generally require more of a budget, say something like a fantasy or a sci-fi epic, then they're going to really need to double down on what fans expect from that genre.
Okay, yeah.
But also what fans of that genre, the people who are definitely going to see it, who are going to pay those cinema tickets or, you know, watch on whatever streaming service, are really going to find interesting as well. So, you know, I think producers will have much more of a focus on what, you know, initially engages audiences, but also, you know, tests their appreciation of the genre.
Yeah, because,
like, what they find exciting and sort of exhilaratingly original. I think we'll see a lot more doubling down in that area.
Yes, in terms of doubling down, I believe we'll see... I think superhero films is the definite test of the decade. Obviously, many people thought Endgame would just be the last one. But obviously, we're like, no, Marvel, I know, we got a whole other decade plan. Some people were like, yay. Some people were like, oh, for God's sake. So I think we'll... And obviously, people were saying, obviously, this year, in terms of superhero films, we've got Birds of Prey, Venom 2, directed by Andy Serkis, friend of the show, Wonder Woman 84, The Eternals, Black Widow, Morbius, the Spider-Man one with Jared Leto. And obviously, that's about six already. They've only got all the shows hitting like Disney Plus. Obviously, there'll be other, not just Marvel DC, but obviously other superhero characters out there and comic book films. So this decade, I think, is the true big test. Like, some people say, will it be a genre that goes on forever? Or will it go the way of a Western and die down slightly? That's a big... I think that's one of the big questions.
It's got a lot of legs for now. at least for the first part of the decades.
I know, yeah. Obviously, we'll see how it goes. I do think, obviously, Marvel and Disney Plus, especially with Kevin Feige's promotion and getting more content straight onto Disney Plus, which is why a lot of the Hulu content got announced, then just got cancelled. So, because I think Kevin Feige wants to put more resources into Disney Plus. So it's a shame in a way that we won't be seeing the Howard the Duck series, but at least at the same time...
It's the one thing we were hoping
for. I know, the Ghost Rider series got cancelled as well, but on the same time I'm hoping it means those characters will appear on Disney Plus in some format, we'll have some really good content there. But obviously, Kevin Feige did say Disney Plus enables us to do more with the characters, so say we can't exactly have room to do a hypothetically a Loki film, but... We can give Tom Hiddleston a 6-episode series. Let's do this. We've got a window to do since we're not swamping the cinemas too much, but there's still a consistent level of content out there. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that consistency will be very relentless. I think we're also going to see a lot more toying with very ultra modern themes and ultra modern topics.
Okay.
So with things like the release of The Hunters on Amazon, and with films like The Plot Against America. And Burton even, films that deal with white supremacism, particularly the emergence of the KKK, which we saw towards the end of the last decade. These are very contemporary discussions. There's the whole conversation around how we, why has white supremacy suddenly had a surge again? And how do we deal with it is a very modern thing. It's sprung up on us at the end of the last decade.
I think films are going to get a lot more political, I think. I think a lot of people are going to be like, solid, let's just go in. But I think if Trump gets re-elected, I think we're going to see a lot more of a backlash from Hollywood, I think.
Yeah, I mean...
Whether it be direct or indirect through films, we'll have to see.
Well, exactly, yeah. I think, given it's still a... in the last, in 2016, it was almost half the population. A general understanding permits. But, I guess they'll probably stay, at least for the most part, apolitical. But
we'll see.
There are certain undercurrents and tones that...
Yeah, and obviously we may see more streaming services for specific ideologies as well, we could see. Because obviously one of the things is people just assume streaming services is a film and TV. We've also got gaming ones, music, sport. They're all streaming services as well. When you got obviously audiobook, we may see more subscriber-only content for certain websites hiding behind paywalls. So
yeah,
that's one way. I think that could maybe have a knock-on effect in film as well, because people's budget could go more towards these areas and they'd be more picky on their film TV.
Yeah.
I think another thing we'll see this decade... I think is more of an emphasis on foreign films, because look, we've had Parasite, which is a phenomenal film that's got so much traction because it might even win the best picture. Obviously, we had Roma last year, and I think, and Parasite's done well with mainstream audiences as well. And I think people are starting to realise get down the subtitle barrier and just break through the wall. And people, I think, are realising, hang on, this is also original and fresh. Why have I not seen this before? And obviously, I think, and also with Netflix investing heavily more in this content as well, we can see the other streaming services do this as well. And I do think we're going to see a lot more emphasis on foreign, non-English language films hitting the mainstream more.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'll still see a lot of remakes of international series.
Totally, yeah.
I don't think that's... going anywhere particularly fast in favour of the, you know, watching the original series themselves. But yeah, it'll be interesting to... I think at the moment it might be a bit too early to see how much of an effect Parasite really has on that.
Its worldwide box office, as it stands at the moment, is 161.7 million.
Which is fantastic.
I know, and it's not even had an official release over here. Like, I saw it at Odeon.
What was its budget?
11 million.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, obviously the director has done... I think he's done a lot of other main films. I think Okja for Netflix. But I think, obviously...
Oh, he also directed, like, The Host.
Of course.
Was it Memories of Murder?
Of course. Bong Joon-ho, possibly I mispronounced that. Won the Palme d'Or. Yeah, he's done Snowpiercer, Okja, The Host, Mother. He wrote Sea Fog. He directed... Barking Dogs Never Bite, Memoirs of a Murder. So he's already had a following in the UK with some of those films, especially like Snowpiercer, which was a very underrated film. But I do think we're going to see a lot more foreign films shaped for general film conversation. And I think a lot of audiences are realising, hang on, there's this whole new world out there of amazing content. If I like Parasite, I might like this, and just go forth really and see what happens.
Yeah, so see where it takes us. I mean... Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I mean, it'll be very exciting if that appreciation for international cinema suddenly booms.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I think it'll still be more of a steady climb, but, you know, that's... I mean, particularly in Europe, the conversation about international films has always been the case. I guess it's more places like the US, Canada, and yeah, I guess, you know, certain parts of the UK scene where... You know, an appreciation for foreign film is yet to really blossom. But it'll get there, I think. I am optimistic about it.
No, I'm optimistic as well. And I think a lot of these directors will get opportunities with big Western co-productions or Western productions in general. And I think hopefully they'll be allowed for creative freedom, because I think people are starting to realise that creative freedom is actually really good.
Yeah, I mean, for independent films.
Yeah.
But if Hollywood takes more of a Blumhouse model where they are just producing, you know, things on smaller budgets and selling them to studios.
Yeah, and maybe we'll see more producers released as Funkos. So.
I mean, thank you for the Jason Blum Funko.
No problem.
Thank you on air, because this is, like, yeah, I really appreciate
it. I bet you did. Did you even know it existed before I gave it to you?
No, absolutely not. The idea seems almost ridiculous.
Because luckily brings me to one of my points. I think we're going to see a lot more weird merchandise. Because, look, for example, Game, the store, obviously a lot more people are downloading their games now. Mm. So one of the ways they're staying in business is merchandise. You can get Rick and Morty, Funko, Pokemon, just general like mugs and collectibles in store, and people obviously do go in and spend their points in them.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways they are kind of staying afloat, is because obviously there's another... You can't really download a shirt, can you? So...
Mm. Well, yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, with online shops like Redbubble, whose, you know, design catalogue is only expanding.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, and, you know, I guess with the rise of, like, streetwear and the sort of kind of alternative...
Fashion, yeah.
Yeah, sort of like meme fashion.
Yeah, of course.
That's going to be very interesting to see.
I think, yeah, I think we're going
to... I think we're going to embrace the full scope of it.
Yeah, I think we're going to start seeing a lot more merchandise. I think that's going to be creative as well, and I think cinemas might even start selling it as well now. As another thing, like, I enjoyed the film. Always a poster I might buy. Always a shirt I might get that then, or...
Yeah, I mean, I guess there'll definitely be more niche cinemas, like, or independent ones that will, I'm sure, will sell some merchandise, if they can afford it.
So,
they have budgets to figure out as well.
So, speaking of big merchandising, that brings me, segues perfectly to my next question. It's Star Wars. This is going to be a very interesting decade for Star Wars, because obviously we're going to have the Obi-Wan series, Series 2 of The Mandalorian, the Cassian Andor series, but the films, they're still... the future of Star Wars is still clouded in mystery. Rian Johnson's trilogy is still up in the air, and there's talks he may abandon it to do a Knives Out sequel. Obviously, Benioff and Weiss left the project to focus on their Netflix commitments, but obviously there's rumours they were fired, and there's all these obviously rumours circulating around the internet where we never truly know what happened.
Mm.
But obviously there's all the people going, oh, you rushed for the final series of Game of Thrones to do Star Wars, and now you've got nothing. So
I think
the future of Star Wars is, though, I think it's going to be more in TV than film. Because I do think it's wise for the franchise to take a break from films for a few years. When the film next one is still penciled in for December 2022, we've still got like 2 years, 11 months to get another one out.
Yeah.
But obviously the Obi-Wan series has been delayed due to rewrites and like, that's not that. They said that the release window won't be affected, but they're now filming it next year instead of the end of this year.
Mm.
Obviously, there's talks about what the next project's going to be. We even see a Star Wars game show where it's hosted by Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar. He's not Jar Jar, but he's playing a Jedi Master in like some Temple Run game show for children.
Oh,
which is on, it's going to be on Disney Plus. I think we're going to start to see, maybe we'll see a Star Wars cooking show or you know, like cooking with Chewie or something.
I mean, if Star Wars was integrated into these early learning programs, that I think that'd be a great move.
Because you want to get like Star Wars books and such, like, you know, my Star Wars A to Z or something like weird like that, you know.
Like A is for Anakin.
B is for Boba. Yeah, let's just do this whole alphabet now.
J is for Jabba.
Z is for Zucker. So there you go.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot more. I think, obviously, you can see all these children's books like learn your colours with Spider-Man or something. I think we're going to see a lot more aimed at younger readers because they can get them in their heads while they're young. And then building fans up from the ground up, and also nostalgia sells, as we all know. So
exactly, yeah. And, you know, particularly for younger kids, it's a great way to build your brand. If, you know, if your imagination is, you're completely focused on this alien universe, then, you know, which is far more interesting than, like, Heineken maths books.
Yeah.
And, you know, which I'm sure is...
Did you say Heineken maths books?
Yeah.
That's actually what they called.
No, Heinemann, sorry.
Heinemann.
Jeez, that's, I mean, in some weird parallel universe, there probably is a Heineken mask.
Four beers.
And what you get if you add a 1+1 beer, you get past your driving limit.
What did Daddy get if he has 6 beers? Drunk. Let's just stop this before it gets weird. But, yeah.
I mean, yeah, so... But, like, you know, I'm sure there's a reason why, you know, particularly, you know, young sort of pre-prep school kids will, you know, study things like the Egyptians because they're just more interesting civilizations. But if you had a learning with Star Wars, like learning basic skills or numeracy or anything like that, that's, yeah, I'm sure that's a great way to build interest in, you know, not only your brand, but also like the wider content that Disney has in store. You know, and you're creating interest from the next generation. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how these studios and streaming services focus on age groups as well.
Yeah,
because, exactly. I mean, I think it was like, you know, by the end of the decade, millennials will make up about 50% of the workforce.
Wow.
I think I read that. And, you know, we have to think very carefully about what Gen Z are interested in.
Yeah.
You know, they're already all over TikTok and... You know, I'm sure Snapchat to a certain extent.
Yeah, obviously the big three, arguably, of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are still strong as ever.
Mm.
Obviously, we've got TikTok now. TikTok. TikTok is still going.
Yeah, Gen Z love TikToks.
We've got TikTok still going. We'll see some...
The mid-market is soaring.
Yeah, we've got WhatsApp. It's not a social media thing. That's still a very popular tool.
Mm.
But I think it's great, because let me just read you the press release. Star Wars Jedi Temple Challenge, an exciting new Disney Plus game show set in a galaxy far, far away, will test young contestants' abilities and the core Jedi principles of strength, knowledge, and bravery as they face thrilling and fun obstacles in an attempt to achieve a rank of Jedi Knight. So, from lightsabers to hyperspace, the Force and the Dark Side, Jedi Temple Challenge transports viewers and contestants into the Star Wars galaxy like never before. And it's just like, wow.
I'm sold.
Yeah. Obviously, we all watch those game shows when we like, go get your own back 50-50. We'll see like a Star Wars version of that. If I was a kid, I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah. I mean, but I guess that was the... you know, we also love those game shows because we just had BBC One and, you know, CITV and, you know, like...
Most of us only had 5 channels back then.
Yeah, the scope of our entertainment was much more limited. But if you have Disney Plus, then, you know, would you really still watch game shows? Or would you watch, you know, another, like, completely fictional Star Wars series or... a Marvel limited series.
I know, and you've got the Star Wars, like Lego Star Wars series aimed at very young children anyway, in the same way you've got like the Lego Batman for aimed at young children, and obviously you've got actual Batman for teenagers, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's going to be...
it's an exciting decade,
provides a lot of opportunities for companies like Quillby.
Yeah. What is Quillby? I'm not really... It's
short form content. It's Jeffrey Katzenberg's products. Essentially, it focuses primarily on short films.
That's interesting.
So yeah, I mean, if Gen Z are obsessed with the TikTok and Snapchat, very extremely short form content, then maybe that's that has a lot of leverage.
Because obviously, there's a lot of people out there who, in the nicest possible way, have very short attention spans.
Sure.
That's why, films like The Irishman seem like an absolute minefield for them. And I know somebody who had to watch it in installments, they just couldn't watch it in, a 3.5-hour block.
Yeah.
And a film must have been really... a film must be so good to keep their attention span for, 2 hours plus.
But I think from short films, that's going to provide a lot of opportunities for young, up-and-coming directors.
I know.
And it'll showcase that if they can produce... a great story, while also being resourceful in short form content, and the story is engaging and clear, then they can produce a number of those, and that's how a lot of producers sign up directly.
Yeah, they see the short, or they do a good episode of a TV series, a big famous one, which I'll come into. I think it's a good example coming up later in my films I'm looking forward to list.
Mm.
And there's also short films as well. Obviously, a lot of directors, the director who did The Evil Dead remake, I can't remember his name, but Sam Raimi. I know who you mean, but Sam Raimi saw a short film he did and was like, that's incredible, and then let him do a big future film. So, yeah.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, look at Lights Out.
Yeah, of course.
It was a Canadian producer who saw the original short film on YouTube, which went viral, and thought, that's a great concept. That director can clearly pull this off in a competent and scary way. Let's invest in this. And it was a success financially and to an extent critically. And, it's still talked about in the horror community.
Of course. Fede Alvarez, that's the guy who did the Evil Dead remake.
Sure, nice.
Yeah, he did a short film, a few weeks later, he made a deal with Sam Raimi's Ghost House Pictures to, a few weeks after that film went viral on YouTube in 2009. Literally, premiered on Halloween, a few weeks later, got a deal to direct a film with them, and then he'd end up doing The Evil Dead, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess just thinking about time-wise...
Yeah.
So, Jack, what films are you looking forward to this year and in the decade ahead?
Honestly, I've got a few for, obviously, in the years ahead, this year. Obviously, in the years ahead, obviously, in terms of series, we've got the Lord of the Rings series I'm very looking forward to. That's interesting to see how that's going to go. Do you think this film could, if the success of the series, in a way, could lead to a big revival of people getting interested in Tolkien again? Or do you think there's already this continued interest already?
I don't know. I mean, general adoration for the Lord of the Rings has generally remained consistent, I think. It's a whole category of meme in itself.
Yeah.
So I don't think appreciation of that has really sort of risen, or maybe it's risen, but it hasn't been depleted in any way, I don't think. Particularly because it focuses on the Second Age and it's based on the Silmarillion, isn't it?
Yes.
So it'll perhaps for people who are already hardcore Lord of the Rings fans, it'll make them even more hardcore, and get them more invested in the lore and mythology. But yeah, I think it will have to answer your question, I think it will have an impact on people reading more into the universe that Tolkien created.
Yeah, I think we're going to see this.
I think there is potential for that.
I know. Obviously, the other films which I want to see, obviously, this year, obviously, in the future, we're going to have another... Apparently, at the moment, the next Matrix film and John Wick 4 are going to release on the same weekend. I think the same day.
Sure.
So we're going to see an over-saturation of Keanu Reeves. He's doing two interviews at once, so if you can somehow do.
Just switching between films.
Yeah. but I'm looking for films I'm looking forward to seeing this year. I've seen The Invisible... I'll just do a top 10. Number 10, The Invisible Man.
Mm.
Number 9, Black Widow. 8, Daniel Craig's Last Outing. As James Bond, No Time to Die, starring Rami Malek. Number 7 is a film called Bios. It's a one-man Tom Hanks film about one of the last... I think the last man on Earth.
Mm.
He's trying to create a robot to look after his dog if he dies, I think.
Oh, interesting.
But the director, I probably mispronounced this, Miguel Sapochnik, he boasts an epic TV resume. He directed the Battle of the Bastards episode in Game of Thrones.
Oh, interesting.
So, and now he's doing a big film with Tom Hanks, so that's looking forward to see. I was looking forward to seeing Dune, obviously, that's going to be the next Dune film. I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman 84, The Eternals. I'm looking forward to see how weird Marvel can go. Number three, Halloween Kills. The next, Michael Myers is back again.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing that.
He just never goes away. I love it.
Number two is Chris Nolan's new film, Tenet.
Tenet, yeah.
That's looking very, very interesting from the trailers.
Yeah, it's a good, interesting, like, spy thriller about landlords.
Yeah. Number one, of course, is, for me, it's Godzilla vs. Kong. I want to see. This is something to say, after Godzilla King Monster didn't do too well, some people consider this to be Godzilla's last chance for at least a few years until the inevitable reboot. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how that's going to go down. See, obviously, two of the greatest monsters of all time duking out.
Yeah, exactly.
And with Adam Wingard behind in the director's chair, you know, a man who on Instagram has said he doesn't really like talking about upcoming projects, but he said he cannot help but scream from the rooftops about this film. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. And will we see a scene like we did in the original where King Kong tries to shove a tree down Godzilla's throat? Will we see that? Who knows?
We're about to find out. And beyond, monster madness.
And beyond this, we've obviously got Robert Pattinson as Batman, and with an amazing cast. Andy Serkis as Alfred, Colin Farrell as the Penguin, Jeffrey Wright as Gordon, Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman, Paul Dano as the Riddler. Peter Sarsgaard's in it, John Turturro's Falcone. It's got an amazing cast already, and I can't wait.
Interesting to see where all these ex-fantasy icons are taking their careers down these very niche, indie, exciting routes. You know, actors like Daniel Radcliffe, Elijah Wood, Robert Pattinson, who were in these huge fantasy franchises, where they became household names.
Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter for Radcliffe and Twilight as well.
But now they're making these really obscure, exciting, independent films.
Of course, you've seen Daniel Radcliffe, he did Imperium and Swiss Army Man, two very difficult and different films. Oh, he's done some stuff's gone straight to DVD, but he's got this thing called Guns Akimbo coming out. He's got guns stuck to his hands.
I mean, we've also, Elijah Wood in Come to Daddy, which is coming out soon.
Maniac, he did a role there.
But I guess he was also in, Sin City, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Which,
he likes to do challenging stuff, Elijah Wood. I think he's very underrated, Elijah Wood, because everyone knows him as, Frodo. But I think he's actually a very gifted actor. Obviously, he did the Dirk Gently series as well. He's done some very challenging Netflix films as well.
Which I think, has done well to... I think Daniel Radcliffe has done that well.
Yeah.
Because he's, he was straight into these challenging, diverse roles. Very challenging characters. But, just under really interesting, more creative directors.
Thank you. Obviously, with Robert Pattinson as well, one of the reasons I think he went for Batman, he said in an interview, he doesn't really want to do something with superpowers, but Batman obviously
about superpowers.
He said he likes it because Batman doesn't actually have superpowers, and he described his Batman as very a flawed character. Obviously, Batman is a bit of a psychological disturbed person. Obviously for all Bruce Wayne's charm and swagger, murdered, he sees his parents get shot as a kid, and one of his therapies is beating up him just as a bat. Obviously a very disturbing character, and Patterson loves playing disturbed and traumatized characters.
Yeah, that's the whole nature of Batman, isn't it? I mean, he's conquering his phobia by becoming the Bat.
I know, and obviously
that's the whole nature of it.
And you see him playing off against other very damaged characters. So, and obviously he's done a lot of interesting films like High Life and The Lighthouse. Obviously, Cosmopolitan. After Twilight, he's really wanted just to
Pattinson and David Cronenberg film.
He just wanted to shed the Edward Cullen mantle. And obviously, when he got announced as Batman, and people going, "Oh no, Edward Cullen!" Like, the last Twilight film came out 8 years ago. He's done other things.
Yeah, and just come on, give him a break. I mean, his performance in The Lighthouse was lauded.
He's consistent. He's not done really big films. Well, he's in Tenet, which is him kind of going back in the mainstream. But again, it's a Chris Nolan film, so it's not going to be a conventional role. It's going to be a challenging role for him, which he likes.
Exactly, which I think he'll do very well in, personally.
Anyway, back to your list.
No, sure, yeah. So a number of films this year which I'm particularly looking forward to. Colour Out of Space, starring Nicolas Cage. The H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's... is it Robert Stanley who directed it?
I think
it?
So, yeah.
Or Stanley something. Really interesting sci-fi horror. Antlers by Scott Cooper. Also produced by Guillermo del Toro. That's going to be fantastic. What else was there? Yeah.
Fantasy Island, you said you're looking forward to.
Fantasy Island, I'm looking forward to. The Invisible Man, I'm looking forward to. I'm just going to have a very Blumhouse year, to be honest. This Jason Blum Funko.
You can take it to all the films, you see it. Like, just leave in the popcorn holder.
Two tickets, please.
Sorry, sir, you can't put your drink there while Jason's there. Like, what? It's like, oh my God.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, and I think. I'm looking forward to seeing The Mandalorian, finally.
Yep.
I'm going to watch everything Star Wars related that comes out. My family and I have always been pretty consistent there.
It is Richard Stanley, by the way.
Richard Stanley.
Which also, funnily enough, was produced by Elijah Wood.
Exactly, yeah. But he produced Mandy as well, didn't he?
I think he was involved, yeah.
Yeah, because he produces indie horrors now. Like, that's his... I think he produced Come to Daddy, which is, not as much of a horror, but a psychological thriller, which is, starring and producing. So, yeah, I think... Yeah, I mean, his production career is going to be just as interesting as his acting.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess, are there any, like, final points that you're particularly keen to make about that decade ahead? Like, things that you'd tell people to look out
for? One thing that I think is going to be interesting to see is, with so much more content coming out, with studios really up in their game, it's going to be interesting to see them argue how they could be green at the same time.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, there's a lot of emphasis on, like, films saying, oh, we've got a green production, don't worry, like, oh, we are giving back to the neighbourhood, to, like, communities and this. But at the end of the day, obviously, film productions are massive. They employ... Big budget films employ thousands of people. You know, some of them obviously aren't even, they can't even fit all of them in the credits because there's so many local people coming just for a day to help out. You know, I've done a big film. I wasn't credited. I don't believe I was credited in it, but I was.
You should have been.
Yeah, thank you.
That credit was robbed from you.
I wasn't paid, but they did like get loads of local volunteers. A lot of films get local volunteers in to help out. Like, even like Tilda Swinton, she gets her job kids' jobs on her films, so they, one of them helped out, I think, in the art department for Doctor Strange, so she's being the ancient one, where her kids are actually doing a lot of behind the scenes work.
Yeah, well, fantastic.
They get told off, yeah, my mum's the ancient one. But, oh,
you can't say that.
Yeah, and it's just, I think films, obviously with the Green Revolution being something that many political parties and figures and general members of the population are generally putting a lot more pressure on companies to do so. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the film world adapts. So obviously, film productions are... Obviously, Michael Bay films obviously probably knock out an iceberg with how much explosions they generate.
Exactly.
Obviously, I mean, how much carbon is generated from explosions.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Are they working on cutting down their carbon footprint? What green initiatives are they taking? This would be a lot of... there'll be more discussions amongst art departments, set and costume designs. Going up to the producers at the top. So, yeah, that'll be a big discussion. I think it's... there'll be a number of gimmicks that will sort of rise and fall.
Yeah.
But I think it's too early to really predict what those are going to be.
Yeah, we've seen a lot more talks about old IPs coming back for, like, remakes. But then again, a lot of audiences, I think, are wanting more original content. Or, like, I think the success of films like Joker do pretty... Sure, I think... Original content, like IPs, can be accepted, but they want to see something new with it. They don't want to see, like with Star Wars, another, like just Skywalker. They want to see something different, I believe.
Mm.
They want to see something new and challenging. I think that's what I think they need to do, is just subvert expectations, I think.
Yeah. And I think, find other ways of paying attention to what fans are interested in. You know, there are plenty of community forum groups out there.
Yeah,
of
course.
Everything from Reddit to Pottermore to all sorts. These are where the conversations about fan expectations are happening. And I think, not the producers can please everyone. And obviously they do their research into what people are interested in seeing more of. But I think it would be a wasted opportunity if more producers didn't look at what these communities are saying. And actually, taking in what comments are the most popular, what people's more serious answers are, because there are ways of measuring and analysing what audiences are more keen to see.
No, because
they're free online.
Because as it stands at present, the highest grossing film of 2020 is Bad Boys for Life, which I think many people aren't expecting. Yeah, it's made more than Doolittle. But The Grudge is number 5, and obviously The Gentleman is number 6.
How much is The Grudge made?
It's, as a moment, on a budget of 10 to 14, it's made 40.4.
Oh, okay, sure.
Obviously, it did receive negative reviews. Obviously, there's still enough in... There's talks of a crossover with the Ring franchise and...
Well, I mean, there already is a Japanese Grudge versus the Ring.
Oh, wow.
Which is, yeah, it's what you'd expect.
Yeah. But does the Ring monster and the Grudge monster fight each other?
Well, yeah, there's two, like, undead Japanese Onryos that... I'm probably mispronounced that. That essentially are lured to fight each other and fight. Yeah, it's... That's interesting moments, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and I guess... Yeah, I mean... You know, and again, Sam Raimi is a very consistent producer in that genre because, you know, even though... You know, plenty of people have said about The Grudge, for example, oh, we don't need another remake of a remake.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a story people are interested in.
It's, I know, it's a world, and it's a name that sells.
Exactly, yeah. You know, it's a world and an entity has a fan base.
And I think a lot of films, franchises, that, you know, that films like The New Terminator, when people expecting, you know, Arnie and Linda Hamilton back on screen for the first time since 91, didn't do... as well as I expected. So people argue, will this franchise's future leave on TV? Which I think a lot more of the bigger franchises are realising the potential of streaming and start moving their resources to a streaming platform.
Or could we have a Sarah Connor story in the style of a film like Logan?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's been discussed before.
I think, yeah, we're going to see...
By fans, not studios.
I think we're going to see a lot more kind of stories in the style of, say, Logan or Joker. I think the Joker effect's going to happen, I think, definitely. Like, a lot more... to try and emulate that film, but it's just going to be a very obvious, like...
Yeah, but I think it'll be a certain time before people realise that, you know, it's... You can't take away all the mystery from these famous villains.
Yeah.
Or heroes, yeah. Even.
Because I do think we're going to see a lot more character studies, I think, in terms of films. Sure. I think Joe could prove that films... It's the first spirit of films like Taxi Driver... hadn't died, and I think we're going to see a lot more character studies about performance pieces, and maybe even more one-man films, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's also because Joker was a break from the crowd, you know, it was a break from Disney and Marvel and all these very CG-heavy films.
And it was so profitable as well, you know.
Exactly, yeah, you know, that's, you know...
Over real, a billion on a 53 budget.
Paid its role in, like, spurring the conversation. But, yeah, I think... Yeah, I think there will be a number of character studies, but I think there'll be a point where, you know, the studios will realise the audiences probably are getting a bit sick of all the mystery being removed. You know, part of the reason why we love, you know, characters like Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger is that we understand, like, elements of their backstory. You know, we don't know them in detail.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them scary and... You know, it opens up so much more horrifying potential of what they can do.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to see another Freddy or Jason film. Definitely missed out here. I think
they're going to fight again.
Maybe, we'll see.
Just a remake of Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Freddy versus Jason 2, the rematch.
The rematch. Featuring Conor McGregor. As Jason.
What, Freddy versus Jason versus McGregor? Maybe we'll see, like, I don't know, Pride and Prejudice and Sonic and Knuckles or something.
Like, no, actually, like, Pride and Prejudice and McGregor.
Conor McGregor is Mr. Darcy. That's a weird thing. That's in an alternate reality somewhere.
Some producer thinks that's an amazing idea. So, Jack, thanks very much for those opinions.
Thank you for letting me come on again.
It's on your own podcast. Yeah. thank you for listening. If you have any thoughts about... what you're keen to see in 2020 and the decade ahead, if you have any ideas about how the industry is going to change, what we're likely to see more of or less of, then please tweet us at Tom Hanks Defense, Defense with a C. I'd also say write in our Facebook wall, but we're currently wrestling with a couple of issues with that, which we'll hopefully sort out very soon. But for now, write in our Twitter.
Yeah, tweet us.
Tweet us. And, yeah, and we'll make sure to get back to you as soon as possible. So thank you for listening, and happy 2020, and make sure you make this decade yours. Thank you for listening. Bye bye. Thank you for listening to Tom Hanks Defense Force. Find us and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.